It's my pleasure to welcome you here this afternoon. My name is Karen Festmeyer. I am president of the Vanderbilt Alumni Association. I live in Memphis, Tennessee, and I graduated in 1980 from Vanderbilt. It's good to see so many familiar faces here, people who are quinks and people who are not quite quinks. It is also my pleasure to introduce our interim chancellor. We are extremely fortunate to have Nicholas Zeppas accept the position of interim chancellor. Nick came to Vanderbilt on August 1st, 1987, and 20 years later to the date, was named interim chancellor at Vanderbilt University. He began his career at Vanderbilt as a professor at the Vanderbilt Law School and still teaches around campus today. Since 2002, he has served as provost and vice chancellor for academic affairs. Our interim chancellor is a leader and a visionary who has engineered many new programs and initiatives, such as this lovely place we are in today, the Freshman Commons, slated to open for an entire freshman class next fall of 2008. Nick also spearheaded the university's comprehensive campaign, Shape the Future. In the era of iPods, iPhones, Vanderbilt has its very own iChancellor. If I'd like to introduce you to Interim Chancellor Nick Zeppas.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. And I'm just going to try to make a few remarks, and then I think we actually have microphones so we can take questions and have some good discussion here. I don't know who the starting quarterback is tomorrow, so if you ask me that question, I told Bobby if he wants to put a third name on the list, put mine there. I got a pretty good two-step drop back. Welcome back to Vanderbilt, and welcome to all the alumni and to this spectacular new facility. One of the truly extraordinary things about working on a college campus, and there are many, many blessings for working on this wonderful campus, is the wonderful, spectacular change of seasons. We do great research here, we do great teaching. Our research is not so good that we actually control the weather, but there's no more beautiful time of the year than fall on this great campus. And for you to be greeted by this glorious weather and to hopefully see Vanderbilt, the Vanderbilt you love, you remember, but seeing the changes that are very much tied to our traditions is our hope for the weekend. The fall time of the year is actually the most exciting time because we welcome all the students back, all the freshmen back. But we're already into about the fifth or sixth week of the semester. And the campus is just alive with so much activity. And they may bring back memories that you had. I'm teaching some freshmen now, so I hear about a calculus class. And, oh my God, I have my first calculus test. We go through the process, fourth or fifth week, talking about, oh, we are all taking our first organic chemistry test. I wonder if I really will be a physician when I leave school. So there's a certain timelessness to Vanderbilt. And the one thing that warms my heart more than anything is when I hear an alumnus from the class of 97 or 47 say, it's just like when I was here. And I feel so much like this is the Vanderbilt I remember, despite all the changes. Despite the trees getting bigger, the kids getting a little bit less formal, a little more casual in their dress. I've noted that for some reason, college students think you can wear shorts year-round and sandals year-round, no matter what the temperature. But there really is a timelessness to this place. And I really want to welcome all of you, particularly those of you who are quinks and measure I'm here 20 years now, you're measuring 50 years, more than a third of the history of this great, extraordinary university. So welcome back, and let me tell you a few things about Vanderbilt, what's going on. Well, the first big thing is we have an interim chancellor. And that was as much a surprise to their John Hall, our trustee, Gene Vaughn, probably as much surprise to them as it was to me. And Gordon, and I will say, I had the office next to Gordon. I loved him like a father and a mentor. He did extraordinary things here. But Vanderbilt has gone through the very unusual transition of having the first interim chancellor, and I'm now called, as we said, the I-chancellor. So it's been a time of transition, but universities are always in transition. Graduating seniors, new freshmen, new buildings opening up, new programs. So it very much is a time of transition, but very much showing Vanderbilt, I believe, at its best. I came to Vanderbilt 20 years ago, as you heard, as an assistant professor in law school, and my wife Lydia, who is here somewhere, came. We drove our station wagon down with an 8-month-old child, and we arrived here with great hopes of a wonderful academic career and a place to raise our children. And it was a privilege to join this faculty as an assistant professor. I am very honored to step in this interim role, and it has been a tremendous pleasure to be able to help out Vanderbilt in another way, just as I tried to do when I got here as a brand new professor. But it's been a wonderful experience for myself, my wife, our kids. Went to school over at the old demonstration school and literally grew up on the campus. And so Vanderbilt has always had a special place for us as a family, and I will work very hard this year to keep this university the extraordinary place it was and continues to be. Now let's talk a little bit about what is happening besides the interim chancellor, because we're back into school. We're back into these wonderful kids coming to study and learn. And you're in this incredible new facility called the Dining Commons. And I want to talk a little bit about it. It was nice for Karen to say that I've played a role in this. And I think probably the only role I played was making sure the budgets worked out and that we could make sure that all the bills were paid and the construction was done on time and under budget. But this building, while new, really reflects our vision of the future tied very much to Vanderbilt's values. What this building is about and all those residence halls are about is every freshman will get to live together. And college at Vanderbilt and the great college experiences, as all of you are testimony to, it's about friendship. It's about the professor who made a difference in your life. The professor who was the mentor outside of the class. Not necessarily the professor who always gave you the A's. You usually didn't go see a professor who gave you an A. It was a professor who maybe said, you need to work a little bit harder, let me help you outside of class. And so what this whole complex is about, the freshman experience, is to find those extraordinary things about Vanderbilt, the sense of community, this idea of friendship, this relationship between professor and teacher, that really is the heart and soul of a great education, and say, how do we do that really for the next generation and the generation after that? We have 1,500 freshmen now in our entering class from an applicant pool of over 13,000. So what we're really focused on is this idea of living together, learning together, and educating the whole student, focusing on mentoring, on advising, on values, on those other important things. We know the kids are going to work hard in the classroom, but this is about community, and it's about growing together and about learning from each other. Education, even when you send your children to kindergarten, it's always about, do you like your teacher? Who are your friends? It starts at that young age, and when the kids come to college, do you like your professors? Who are your friends? And those are really the values we're trying to capture here. And I think it will very much support Vanderbilt's future in the sense that the undergraduate experience here, and I'm a law professor, is the most important experience on the campus. Bringing kids 18 to 22, those important transformational years, they are the most important thing we do. So having the kids in this community and learning together as freshmen. And then hopefully, we are going to take the concept across the street. And I had a good discussion today with a number of our alumni about the various Kasam halls. I guess we called it the old Kasam, or the original Kasam. And then we have the new Kasam built in the 1950s. And our plan is to take those down and to build some nice new residence halls there. Again, bringing the faculty back to the campus and have the faculty and student interaction so much a part of the education. The other thing you see here is this is about dining. And if you keep an eye on your kids or your grandkids, remember when they were very little and you thought, am I ever going to get a meal without these children? Am I ever going to be able to sit and have time to relax and eat? And we went through that. And I remember being with our pediatrician, and he said, the one thing you should always do is eat with your children. Eat as a family. And every night you can do that as often as you can. When our kids got to be driving age and older, I realized what a challenge that was. And I think that dining together, particularly in our technological society, our fast-moving society, is central to building community. So what you see here is a beautiful dining facility with these long tables kind of saying, pull up a chair. Just like when you came to Vanderbilt. Well, how do I meet new people? How do I connect? This hall will be open to freshmen, faculty, alumni can come and eat. We've already had alumni from downtown sneak over for dinner and for lunch. So it really is about building that robust Vanderbilt community from the freshmen all the way through the alumni. You might have seen about 2 months ago, there was a nice little article. There was an education section in the New York Times talked about the future of undergraduate education. And Vanderbilt in this facility and campus was featured. So I believe we're doing the right thing. And it's not that it's just new, it's distinctly Vanderbilt. It's about those friendships, the community, the connection to that professor. Let me talk about another important area, and that is undergraduate admissions. And I have a senior in high school and a junior in college, so I've kind of gone through the process once. I'm going through it again, and I go through it every year. I hope you saw in the Alumni Magazine this year, we did a pretty lengthy article on how do we do college admissions at Vanderbilt. You know, how can we kind of make it more understandable, more transparent to particularly nervous parents? And it was an effort really to say, these are the sort of things that go into what Vanderbilt tries to do when it enrolls its freshman class. We're very proud to say, as many applications as we get, we build the class one by one, student by student, person by person, based certainly on academic record. I always get asked by parents, what should my child do to get into a good college? And I always say, do well in high school. Doing well in high school is a really good indication that your child will do well in college. Of course, there are standardized test scores. Vanderbilt is at this point where we have so many bright youngsters who want to come here with great test scores. I think over 10% of the class this year was valedictorians. And so what we really do is we build a class that's diverse and interesting with a multitude of talents and huge potential for leadership and making a difference in the world like you have as alumni. So, and if you ask students, parents, what is Vanderbilt known for, it is very bright kids who are very balanced and have a multitude of talents, and tend to be bright, but very, very normal. In fact, you know, sometimes we say, oh, we need to get a couple of math nerds in this class here. I mean, you know, it's just, but it's a very balanced, interesting group of kids. I think that's why our kids have always gone out to be leaders. When you get out into the real world, it's not what was your grade or how smart are you, it's do you work well with others? Can you communicate with others? So we look for kids who are obviously bright, but qualities of leadership, service, integrity, communication, those are things that are central. Because these kids, as much as our professors are great, all these kids live on campus. They learn from each other. And what better way to ensure learning from each other than to have those kids with many talents and social abilities interacting all the time? I would say we're also thought of as a very socially active campus. There are many schools you can go to, and I won't name them, but many of the kids, I think, arrive, frankly, too stressed out about what's happening next in life. And my ultimate goal is for every child at Vanderbilt, academic success is not the most important. Their happiness and wellness is absolutely paramount. So I am very proud that we have demanding academics. I tend to be a little bit traditional when it comes to curriculum and grading, but it is a demanding environment, but these kids are able to enjoy life. Those years 18 to 22 that you look back on, and hopefully you say, as I say to the freshmen, these are the best 4 years of your life. This is where you can take art history and you're an engineer. You can read Shakespeare. You won't have those chances again. Every time you turn around, there are going to be four buddies, four friends. And if two of you, if you have a test, someone else has a test. You don't have a test, they don't have a test. So we really try to make it an environment where these kids can be nourished and nurtured and grow and ultimately leave, but be very happy. It's a very different student body as you look across the campus. I think one thing I can assure you, and I hope I'm evidence of this, Vanderbilt changes people much more than people change Vanderbilt. This is a university that is over 130 years old with wonderful traditions, great alumni. Things pass through the generations. And are the kids more diverse? Absolutely. They're looking more like the world they're going to go lead into. 25% of them are minorities. Over 4% this year were international students in the undergraduate body. That's the world that these kids are going to go into. And we need to prepare them to lead, to do, frankly, a better job than my generation did in finding sameness over difference. And so I think these are bright kids, but they're very much Vanderbilt kids. And I hope you get chances to interact with them. I have parents here. And they're just extraordinary young people, and they're really our hope for the future. I love to see alumni children. One thing I keep track of is, and I think these are remarkable institutions, I can have a sixth generation alumni child in my class with a first generation college student. You know, where else does that happen other than on a Southwest Airlines flight? It is just incredible to see. I think I've got two or three fifth generation kids, first generation Vanderbilt, but alumni kids are very well represented. We'd probably be above the average at private universities. My biggest quibble is that the alumni children who are admitted only come at about a 50% rate. Half of them choose, for reasons unknown to me, half of them choose to go elsewhere. But we love to see the alumni children. I'm often asked, is there a preference for alumni? And I say, well, there are actually two preferences. The first preference is your parent went to Vanderbilt, so they're probably pretty smart. And the second preference is, as many people did, came on scholarship, they inculcated in their youngsters the value of education. So they learned to love education. So we look very closely at alumni children, and we love to see them here, and we think that Vanderbilt needs to continue that wonderful mix of multi-generational families, along with someone who's first generation going to college. That's really, to me, the American dream. That's the story of America, and that really ought to be the story of a great institution. One other thing we measure very closely is if a child comes back as a freshman, do they return as a sophomore? If the basic principle is, do they like your product? This year we were about 96%. 96% who came as freshmen, or freshmen returned as sophomores. I am still not happy. It should be 99%. It must. This is a real signal for, are you embracing every child? Is every child finding a friend? Is every child connecting? And we can make admission mistakes. 96% is pretty good, but I'd take about 99.9%, you know, once in a while. If you get 100%, then they think you cheat, you know? I mean, you don't want it that high. So we're seeing them return. And John and Jean can remember days when it was in the 80s. And you lose 15% of the kids after your first year. And that's just not good. It's not good. If you were running a restaurant and you said, well, every time 15% of the people come back, that's not a good business model. But you know what? When you have a warm, embracing, loving, great place, it's not right either. So we're very happy that the kids come back. The other thing that happens very much with these youngsters is universities are timeless in their knowledge. You can walk into many classes, and some of them might be very different. You know, they may be new disciplines, proteomics. We're past genomics. You can go into a class on ancient philosophy. They'll be reading the same Aristotle you read. A class on American history. They'll be studying the causes of the Great Depression. What you're seeing with the kids these days is they are very, very keen to ask, not in a purely vocational way, but in a, I care about these things. I'm interested in various areas. One area that I'm very proud to say in which we're leading is the political economy of healthcare. We all believe that Vanderbilt should play a pivotal role in addressing the cost and fair distribution of healthcare, not just in America, but throughout the world. We have hospitals, we have clinics, we do basic research. So what we have done is we have created a variety of programs across the university in the economics of healthcare, the sociology of healthcare, and we started a new major. Again, the kids really drove us on this, called Medicine, Health, and Society. It's an interdisciplinary major, primarily centered in the College of Arts and Science. And within the first 3 years, it went from zero to 106 majors. And I am so pleased that the Vanderbilt students are being curious and educated in this very complex area of economics and politics and science. So that's a new major that we have. Another interesting area, and I mention this not because of someone winning the Nobel Prize this morning, but we're seeing a great focus on environmental and energy concerns among the youngsters and in our research on campus. So this building, and again, the kids really led the way, is LEED certified. It is certified as an energy efficient building. When if you're flying out of town and you take a certain flight path, you'll see all the roofs are white, reflecting heat. The fireplaces are some special fireplaces. Those of you sitting upstairs will notice that those are the chairs from the Heard Library. And if you didn't notice, don't say, because that means you didn't study enough. So what happened was kids don't go sit in the library like they do. Like they did. And I was a big library person. And so we had all these chairs in storage. And we thought, what a wonderful thing to go back and bring those chairs from the Herd Library, be energy efficient. Again, capture the new and old. Bring those traditions forward into this new space. So we're seeing much more interest in that area. Kids are very active in recycling. And these are wonderful educational opportunities with the youngsters. They're very, very keen on recycling. And then they'll come to me and say, we need a new student parking lot. And I say, now why do you need a park? Because I have to drive from here to there. I said, well, what's the carbon effect of that? And they're like, oh yeah, I'll come back with a new plan. So they come back with a van plan. They're smart, they're great kids. Another area that we're building strength in, and again, driven very much by these bright youngsters and the faculty, is Middle Eastern and Islamic studies. And again, not to be trendy in any way, but to really take on seriously these questions of history, culture, and religion in these unique places we have. We have a divinity school. We have a College of Arts and Science. We have a law school. We're uniquely positioned to take on not political diatribes or showmanship, but serious study of an important part of the world's culture. So, interesting new programs happening all the time. As you heard, we've been in a capital campaign, and it's almost like we're always in a capital campaign, but it's made a tremendous difference, and I have to thank each and every one of you. These facilities, the students on campus, 60% of the kids are on scholarship now. The great faculty. Just this semester, David Wasserstein received a chair in Jewish studies from Eugene Greener, an alumnus of the university. Ellen Armour received a chair in the Divinity School, the Carpenter Chair for an alumnus of that school. Michael Best, who's won every teaching award in this university, received a chair from an anonymous donor. I wish every day you could be on the campus with me. And I was with a couple of alumni, and they were going over your little daily sheet. What lecture do I go to? Oh, this looks interesting. Doesn't it remind you of being back in school? Oh, I don't want to take that class. I'd like to go to this lecture. So it is really a remarkable place with great faculty and fantastic students. We do our best to do more than say, could you please support us financially? We really do try to engage you as alumni. You are stewards of this university. We've started a very, very active alumni interviewing process. Poor Gene was running his own out of Texas until we gave him help. But all alumni and parents can sign up to interview prospective students. It's a wonderful way to help us recruit. It's a wonderful way for you to be connected to those 17, 18, 19-year-old kids and say to them, well, why are you interested in Vanderbilt? And I bet they'll tell you probably the same things that make you love it. So that's very important. We use technology. We are on iTubes U, YouTube. Many of our events are broadcast over the internet. There's no substitute, however, for being on this great campus. Let me close just by talking a little bit about our football game tomorrow. And athletics. I was recently at an SEC chancellors and presidents gathering, and as the interim and the new person, I kind of sat quietly and just listened to great discussion. But the topic of SEC championships came up, and I kind of proudly said, well, between Florida and Vanderbilt, there are four major sports in the SEC, women's basketball, men's basketball, baseball, and football. We won two of them, women's basketball and baseball. And baseball won the tournament and the regular season. And I just said to the people from Auburn and Alabama, and I said, boy, I know what you're doing wrong down there. And, you know, I said, maybe you need to take some kids who are a little bit smarter. That'll help you out. So I think the athletic program here is just outstanding. People have asked me, well, are you going to put an athletic director in there and things like that? And I thought, we've never had more success. You know, I'm not going to change anything. Now, we're going to beat Georgia tomorrow. That's for sure. But I think the university, I came 20 years ago. I walk across the campus. It still feels just like Vanderbilt to me. And it's maybe because I'm here every day, but it's a glorious, extraordinary institution. And I think, particularly when it comes to the education of undergraduates, we are second to none. The nurturing, the love, the intellectual challenge, the advising, the mentoring. As I said, I have a senior in high school, and he won't apply, and that's good because I'd probably have to open up that rejection letter in the mail. But it's a great place for youngsters. It really is. And I feel very blessed that every day I can come in and be a part of this great institution. So all is well, and there are 22,000 people working hard every day at Vanderbilt. I'm one of those 22,000. Those are the people that make it work. There are over 100,000 alumni who love and nourish and support. You're the people who make it work. There are 11,500 brilliant people studying everything from medicine to mechanical engineering to hermeneutics. They make it work. So I think the university's in just outstanding shape. And financially, academically, intellectually, it is an extraordinary institution. So I'm happy to answer. We have some open microphones here. I'm happy to, the microphone over there, and I'm a lawyer by training too, so I'm happy to take those hard questions, or really, please, any questions. Yes. Oh, go ahead. Oh, all right.
Frank Wilson from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I think the thing that I appreciated most while I was here was the opportunity to get a liberal education. In fact, looking backward over the years, I think the courses I took in the arts have been of more value than the pre-medical courses I took in the sciences at that time. But we live in an area of earlier and earlier channeling into career interests, and a reluctance, it seems to me, on the part of students to take courses that don't have immediate relevancy to that career path. So I wonder what you think about this issue and what, if anything, Vanderbilt can or should do to ensure that as many students as possible get an education that will enable them to cope with the ethical and the social and the political issues that we have to deal with in the modern world.
Well, that is an absolutely outstanding question, and I let me say I could not agree with you more. And as I said, I tend to be, if anything, more traditional in terms of core curriculum. You know, I would have them reading Thucydides and Shakespeare and really focusing on what I think are great minds and great works. What I will say is our commitment to the liberal arts is for Vanderbilt, and I will say as provost, the chief academic officer, is absolute, unflagging, and fully supportive. And from the faculty we hire to the curriculum we design to the things we teach, it is about the liberal arts. And it is about developing the breadth of understanding of the human condition. It is the importance of critical thinking, of reading text, old and new, and interpreting and reinterpreting. It is about writing. We have every freshman in a writing seminar with a professor. Draft, redraft, draft, redraft. That communication in writing is, I will never say it's a lost art, because as long as I have a role to play at Vanderbilt, it will not be a lost art. I think communication in the written world, I wish we could go back and de-invent email. So our philosophy in our curriculum is very much a liberal arts education. And we have over 100 English majors, Spanish majors, history majors. Econ, whether you go to Harvard, Princeton, Stanford, Carolina, econ tends to be a large major. Now, one thing that Vanderbilt has not done and will not do is have an undergraduate business major, because the best education at that point is a liberal arts education. So I think in our curriculum, particularly in the College of Arts and Science, is set up to demand a course on international studies, a course on literature, a course on history. It is the liberal arts. Now, one thing I'm very proud of as well is we have this wonderful grouping of undergraduate schools. John's a graduate of the engineering school. We have a Blair School. We have this wonderful school of education. Even those more professional schools, their linkage to the liberal arts is powerful. And in fact, we have so many kids. The reason a kid will come to study engineering here over Georgia Tech or MIT is the liberal arts. The reason they will come to Blair over Juilliard is the liberal arts. And so each of the schools outside of ANS has writing, literature, history. Those requirements are for any degree for an undergraduate. So it's very interesting how the word liberal has been tainted. We believe in a liberal education. Open that mind. I was at commencement and I was talking to a parent. I think it was an alumnus, and very well-dressed man, and I have a son, he's studying philosophy and comparative literature. And you know what? I don't care about what he becomes because he loves what he does. And I tell every parent, find your passion. So I was talking to this parent, Vanderbilt alumnus, child was graduating. I said, well, my son studies philosophy, comparative literature. And they said, well, what do you think he'll become? I said, I really don't care. He loves what he does. And I said, well, what was your major? He said, philosophy. I said, well, what do you do? He said, I run a hedge fund. And go look at all the great, look at all of these great business leaders. I majored in English. I majored in history. I majored in philosophy. That's the value of that liberal education. And we're unyielding on that. And the kids who come here know that. There's a self-selection, even in engineering, Peabody, and Blair. So I hope that's not too lengthy an answer, but to a critical question.
Good afternoon. Michael Brasser, class of 97. And I have a comment and then a question. I hope you don't wear that tie tomorrow. And then the question is... You mentioned that you're going to take...
I got all black and gold. What do you see tomorrow? And when do you see the face paint? I mean, then you'll really...
Well, I saw you lead them out on the field for the Richmond game. That was really cool.
Yeah. But, had the Joe Paterno gate with run.
That was highly motivating. But my question is, are you going to take down towers as you look to, as far as the commons concept?
Yeah.
Are towers coming down?
Yeah. We're talking about Carmichael Towers, one of the great architectural creations. Let me tell you a little bit about it. Do I have any people who lived in towers? Were you in suites? Single. Oh, that's like Elba. Oh, boy. Boy. The towers were built at an interesting part of the development of Vanderbilt in education. And they were really built when the federal government discovered between the GI Bill and the baby boom, you couldn't house enough people on the campus. So the federal government decided we needed to help universities build. So those buildings reflect the federal government's kind of Bauhaus primitive architecture in the late 50s or early 60s. Interestingly, let me make two comments about the towers. They're very low density. And so if you go around to look at high rises at other universities, the towers actually are relative low density. There are only about 300 kids in towers. Second thing is the seniors love them because they have suites. Do I have any seniors or juniors who had suites in towers? Did you like it? Yeah. So they tend to be pretty popular. And, you know, here, the other thing is, when you are working at Vanderbilt, you do the best you can for your generation and then try to tell the other people when you leave, I did my best. There are some other challenges ahead. We'll be here forever. And someone was going to have to make a decision about the towers, but I think that'll come way down the road. But they're very popular with the students. The final thing I have to tell you is, campus housing is like New York real estate. Why do people live in hovels in Soho? The three rules of real estate: location, location, location. And if you tell a kid you can be near the gym, you can walk to all your classes, there's parking nearby, you will see living patterns that you will not initially understand. So one of the most interesting things is all the freshmen live here. Well, what happens? Because Sam needs some work in the quad. We have a naming gift for one of the new colleges down there. What happens to Branscombe? And I was scratching my head, so what did I do? Brought a bunch of students together. I don't know what to do. I'm 52 years old. I don't live in these places. The students know everything. And it was interesting. A lot of the women would like to live in Branscombe. And then I started remembering, I think it used to be a women's residence hall. Back to the future. So the location of Branscombe makes it very ideal. So I think Branscombe is not as much a challenge as Kassam, but we can only do so much, and we have to be very prudent in our finances. You know, it's just, I told the alumni board this morning, you know, I've been fortunate to have mentors and colleagues like Gene and John and Ike Robinson. I never knew Ike when I was a young faculty member, but I got to know Ike when I became the provost, and he taught me so much about budgeting. He used to just say, run it like your house. Don't build it if you can't afford the mortgage. What's in your savings account? What's in your checking account? And so we can have big dreams, and we may say, well, the towers need to be fixed, but you know, everything in moderation and everything in prudence. Yes?
Everett Mosley from Huntsville, Alabama, in class of 1953. You partially answered my question, one of my questions, and that is what happens to the students in their sophomore, junior, and senior year as far as living is concerned? Are you going to be able to house them all on campus? Or what's
yeah, that's a good question.
There?
Right now.
And the other is, what do you have a size goal for the student body, undergraduate body at Vanderbilt?
Yeah.
The freshman class is about four times as big as mine was.
Yeah.
And my last child graduated from here in 85. And I detected less of a sense of community in my children than I and my classmates had.
Yeah.
That's difficult to manage as you get increase in size.
Yeah.
The other thing is I lived in Kassam Hall on the third floor, and I brought my shotgun to school and kept it up there with me.
Yeah. We've got regulations against that now, unless it's dove season. Okay, so there was, do we have enough beds? And then size of the class, okay. We actually can house every student on the campus. And Vanderbilt, going back to Chancellor Branscombe's time, in one of the acts of perhaps swift arbitrary action, imposed a requirement that everybody live on campus. I am of the view that the truly great universities, colleges of the next 100 years will have all students living on campus with professors. Education is about interaction. It's about association. So our goal is to have that. I think there are very few universities that will do that. I think Harvard, Princeton, Yale, and Stanford, and Vanderbilt probably will be it. It's a wonderful thing to contract out your resident life, but Vanderbilt is a special, sacred place. To live on this campus is extraordinary. And I say to the students, they said, well, you know, I may want to get a condo. I said, a condo? They said, well, I'd like to, you know, they'll say, I want to see what it's like to be independent. And I said, independent? I said, so you're paying your tuition? Well, no, I mean, it's like, I'd like to know what it's like to pay an electric bill. I said, I'll tell you what, come to my house, you can pay mine. It's just, I think that college is about college. And I say to these youngsters, you'll have your apartments, you'll have your mortgages, you'll have your electric bills. And, you know, most kids want to live on campus. Now, I get a few who are running some interesting parties and things like that. That then gets to be the neighborhood issues that split town gown. You know, if you have a lot of students living around your campus, and then you say, we want to build a new hospital, you can't do it. You just can't do it. So our goal is to have everyone live on campus. Now, the problem is, when we take a residence hall down, we lose capacity. Kissam will be about 650 beds that will be lost. We currently have about 6,200 freshmen. That's too many to me. And the entering class is 1,550. So the size of the class also relates to the number of the beds on campus. If I really had a magic wand, I would have a freshman class of about 1,200. And I believe that education is still student to student, professor to professor, in very small settings. So, but we're about 1,500 we're shooting for. We've grown so much because it's good news. Remember I told you 97, 96% of the kids come back? More kids on campus. The other thing is, every year we shoot for 1,550. Well, what if more kids say yes than we think? We have all these yield models. So we offer 3,500 spots, 1,650 kids say yes. I can't say, you know what? I overbooked that flight. I'll give you a voucher to go to another school. So we really try to calibrate that. This year, for example, I think we had like 1,650 kids. I had some in singles and towers. But we want to get it to about 1,550. And community, to me, it breaks my heart when you say you didn't feel your kids had it. And all I can tell you is that is one of the reasons I joined the Vanderbilt faculty, the sense of community and collegiality, and that's what this whole project is about. It is about capturing in these houses friendship, community, dialogue, mentorship. There's a professor in each one of these buildings living, and the dean of the commons, he's a history professor, and he has twin daughters. They're 15 years old. They're living on campus. Another professor just had twin sons. They're about 8 months old. We found in the archives these old pictures of Professor Vaughn. You remember he was the Vaughn House? He was a physics professor, mathematician, librarian. Wonderful pictures of him, his brilliant children, one of whom became the chair of the Vanderbilt Board, playing football with the students, sitting with the students. We're trying to recapture that sense of family and community. These are big, complex institutions, research, hospitals. How do you get that community? And we work hard at it. We really do, and I prize it.
Hello.
Oh, Gene, you go. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Bob Johns, class of 57. If I understood you correctly, you have characterized the student body as academically extraordinarily capable and talented, and as normal, personally and socially. What I wonder is, is Vanderbilt going to do enough to help this transfer to those who are not quite so academically outstanding and not so socially normal? In other words, to solve the problems of the world. Do they have, what's going to give them this transfer? When I was at Stanford working on my PhD, this was one of the truisms of that time. I don't know whether it's absolutely so, but if you don't do something about the larger society now, you're not likely to do much later. So it concerns me. This is a wonderful opportunity for everyone who comes here. But what about transfer? Transfer to the society.
I could not agree with you more. I went to a great public land grant university, University of Wisconsin, which was really the founder of what's called the Wisconsin idea, which is research in action. I could not agree more in that what we do on our campus must translate out into changing things in the real world. Now, I will highlight a few things that I'm very proud of at Vanderbilt. Number one, we have something called Alternative Spring Break, which is basically, I went on an alternative spring break down to Fort Lauderdale. But these youngsters decided that they would use their spring break to go out and solve problems in the world. And that started at Vanderbilt. It's a nationwide movement. They now, the kids came to see me and they're angry about how short winter break is. And I said, now tell me your problem. He said, we started Alternative Winter Break. We've started a new program for every freshman called Vanderbilt Visions. It's a year-long orientation. Most colleges do orientation, come 2 days, don't drink, respect everybody else, see you later. And then, of course, all heck breaks loose on your campus. Year-long orientation meets once a week, taught by a professor. First week, you go out and do a service project. And so our largest scholarship program, the Ingram Scholars, is a service-based scholarship. Those are values that we have, we try to nurture, and much of our work on campus is applied research, too. We just started something called the Center for Nashville Studies, which is a partnership with Metropolitan Nashville, where they come and set a research agenda for us. We're going through tremendous transformation in immigration. What is that doing to Nashville? Where are social services located? Someone needs a driver's license. Where are people living? So our children's hospital and our hospitals, you talk about relevance. I mean, the care that we provide there for people who have nothing. I mean, that is amazing that people show up without any insurance, without any hope, and they get world-class care, over $200 million in charity care. We are truly, that is the struggle, the theory practice. Get transporting that knowledge out to the real world. Many of our science initiatives are bench to bedside, pharmaceutical development, medical devices. We just invented an insecticide that's a natural oil. One of our vector biological scientists discovered the gene that controls the mosquito sense of smell. Bill Gates discovered him, is giving him funds. Help me cure malaria. So we do a lot of basic research that looks internal, I agree, but we are always focused on what difference are we making to humanity. And we have wonderful humanities departments, English, history, but I say, you know what? We're all humanists. We are all humanists, and we must serve all humanity.
Vanderbilt has gone from G to Z. Well, I just want to make a quick comment about that Z, because from G to Z is not downward. Everybody will make up their own mind, but let me, and search committees have a way of taking on a life of their own. But folks, do not be discouraged about this label interim. Do just tell you two or three things that faculty always been proud to have Nick as the provost. One of them, senior position, said there, we're glad to have Nick as provost because we know he's smarter than any single one of us. Faculty, Dean told me last week that his visiting with the other deans, every one of them want to make the interim chancellor the permanent chancellor.
No. This is not a revival meeting. You know, Gene, if you keep this up, I'm going to turn this into my eulogy. Lydia?
Okay.
Lay me out like the Irish honey.
What I want, just simply want to say is it did happen suddenly, but Vanderbilt was in an extraordinarily fine position. Because as the people close in know, and as was been said a couple of times, if Gordon Gee started a sentence and Nick Zephos ended the sentence, and all it was the other way around. Folks, we are in wonderful shape. If we looked out and saw Nick Zephos as Chancellor of Duke University, we would really be sad. So, nobody, I say this without any portfolio whatsoever. I'm in my 35th year on the Board of Trust. I have served under three chancellors. We have a great interim chancellor, so be encouraged and not discouraged. But please do not wear a red tie tomorrow.
I know, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I had someone go to the hospital, Children's Hospital, the other day, and they said, we got great care, but they gave us a blue cast. It was Duke blue. So I called up purchasing. I said, get the darn black and gold tape over to the pediatric orthopedics. Thank you so much, Gene. Those are too kind. Thank you. Another question? Great.
My name is Karin Till. I'm class of 54. I was going to say, if you need a tie tomorrow,
I've got
a black and gold tie. That you can wear. I do have a question, though. Of the 1,500 new freshmen, how many 100% need scholarships has Vanderbilt given this year?
60% of the freshmen are on scholarship.
But they're, you know, partial or?
Partial. I would say the average need-based scholar.
Grandson who. Fifth generation, who has high school scores and high SAT scores, could he apply for a need scholarship?
You know, we actually, I can't answer your tax returns,
need-based aid goes to families, some of them have $150,000, $160,000 in income. And the real story of Vanderbilt in America is mom's a teacher, dad's a laborer. Dad's a teacher, you know, mom's a secretary. Mom's a single mom. They had a brilliant kid. That kid needs help. So the middle class and the upper middle class is really, that's where those kids really need help. Now, we have a lot of very poor kids at Vanderbilt compared to our peers. You know, we have the Pell Grant, which is the lowest level of support. I think we have about the eighth or ninth highest percentage of Pell Grant kids in the country. And it's a school for everybody. It really, really is. And that's what legitimates us. And, you know, I love when a kid can afford to pay the full freight. I do it with my child. I'm blessed. But I want my child to be with a child who worked hard, maybe needed a little help to get there. I certainly did when I went to college. And those are the friendships. I had a parent, sorry to go on, but I had a parent from Chicago, very affluent family. And their son's best friend became a kid was on full scholarship, grew up in a poor, poor part of southern Illinois. And the mother said to me, that's transformed my son's life. That's his best friend for life. And that would have never happened anywhere but a Vanderbilt opening its doors to everybody. So it's a big challenge. It's very expensive to do. That's why we keep asking you for all those scholarships. So scholarships are critical. Any other? Thank you very much for your attention and attendance. Are you done with me?
I'm done with you. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. Y'all have a good night. Enjoy your class parties.
I'll be there. I got to go change my tie. I got a black and gold one in the office.